we present the News Quiz with your chairman, Barry Took. Hello and welcome again to the News Quiz. We start with a cutting from Computer Weekly, read by Peter Donaldson.
Hewlett-Packard has developed an atomic clock that is accurate to within a second every 1.6 million years. It comes with a 5-year guarantee.
Thank you, S.F. Vincent of Chorley Wood, for sending us that. Now, let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Richard Ingrams and Ian Hislop. Facing them, on my left, Alan Corran and Chris Dunkley. Before we start round one, here's a cutting from the London Evening Standard, spotted by A.B. Knight of Highgate.
There is a word in the Thai language that sounds remarkably familiar to the British electorate. Keenock. The literal translation is fallen from the sky. Colloquially, around Bangkok, it translates as birds droppings.
Nothing political there. Richard, who's beetling about strumming up support from the floating voter?
Well, the person who's beetling about is Earl Panstone. And I usually try to bring him in anyway to provide a little balance. He's been beetling about jumping over five-bar gates.
No. This is a real beetle.
Oh.
That's the clue, you see, beetling.
In the election. Beetling.
It's John Lennon. He's canvassing for the Tories.
I don't say anything funny about that. I think he's suffered enough. It's the other chap who lives in seclusion near Henley, isn't it? I can't remember his name.
This is McCartney of Cavendish Avenue, isn't it?
No, it's not McCartney.
It's Harrison.
It's Harrison.
Yes, that's the Henley one.
Is it?
McCartney lives near Rye, but Harrison lives at Henley-on-Thames.
Oh, I see.
I hope all the burglars listening are taking note.
He's backing this strange party which advertises in the newspaper, the Maharishi's party.
That's right.
The new law, natural law, I think.
That's exactly.
Do you see that?
Yes, they can all float and fly.
Yes.
No worse than claiming the recession's over, is it?
Yes, Richard, you're absolutely right. It's George Harrison who's playing his first major concert in Britain since the Beatles split in aid of the Natural Law Party and their guru, the Natural Yogi. The Fab One plans to promote transcendental peace, tranquility and inner calm by blasting the Albert Hall with 30,000 megawatts of electric guitars. Followers of the Maharishi Mahesh Yogi and his shadow chancellor, the Maharishi Mahesh Boo-Boo, have delighted in his campaign speeches delivered to mantra-chanting mobs from the lotus position 3 feet above his soapbox. Which brings me, naturally enough, Ian, to your question. Who's trying to soft soap the electorate?
Oh, this is Major, is it?
Yep.
I thought he might come in. He's had this brilliant idea that if he stands on a box, everyone will think he's terrific.
You'll think he's
It's
Alan
on a Lair. Par with a lot of the other ideas of the last 13 years.
It's John Major who answered Conservative pleas to raise his political profile by standing on a wooden crate. The prop has become an essential item on the Prime Minister's battle bus, and Central Office are delighted to have found a new use for Nigel Lawson's old lunchbox. Chris, welcome to the programme. Why were red stars at night Sheffield's delight?
Well, this must be to do with the big rally in Sheffield, at which somebody or other, I can't remember his name, arrived in a red helicopter lent by the Duchess of York, presumably.
It was Stephen Fry, wasn't it?
Stephen Fry. this must be the enormous rally held by the Labour Party with balloons, smoke, 11,000 people, and Mr. Kinnock.
That's absolutely right. It was the Labour Party who held their election celebration a week early, just to make sure they got one, and hired the Sheffield Arena for a combined political rally, rock concert, video show, karaoke night, and Tupperware party. top of the bill for the new-look youth-orientated party was Barbara Castle, who compared the event to 1945 and promised that the next Labour administration would scrap rationing. There was a special guest appearance by a mystery personality, a Mr. Gerald Kaufman. Alan, would you please listen to this?
Qu'il était triste cet Anglais dont la main du temps n'avait fait qu'estomper doucement les traits de son visage. Tout seul, immobile et muet, debout près du bar, il buvait. On aurait dit qu'il revenait d'un long voyage.
Well, that was Edith Biard. Seeing a song roughly translated as The Sad Englishman, and the question is, where did Parti not translate as Nothing Said?
She used to sing it to him in the bath, you know, while she was soaping Mitterrand's back. This is Mitterrand's mistress, is it not?
What?
Who disappeared into the long twilight. This is...
Edith Piaf.
Edith Cresson. This is Madame Cresson, who has gone.
No, it's not about that. It's about a visitor to that little land across the sea.
Ashton was the only one who went to the little land across the sea.
That's right.
He doesn't sing like that.
You haven't heard him in the bath with Edith Cresson. It was Paddy Ashton who, for a change, turned his attention to foreign affairs and went on a day trip to Boulogne to deliver an election speech. The Liberal Democrat leader, known affectionately in France as Paddy Key, employed his skill with foreign tongues to translate hung parliament as guillotine to the assembly and proportional representation as scale model. But Paddy, the only MP trained to kill with his bare speeches, obviously did get his message across, but how the appalling state of the country could only be solved by getting rid of the Prime Minister. And Madame Cresson was out within a week. And the scores at the end of this round are, as is usual in the programme, for all. We start round two with a court report from the Northern Echo.
Susan Smith, 22, who slashed her own left cheek with a piece of glass in order to frame her husband, John, was jailed for 9 months yesterday. Luckily, John had been out committing a theft at the time, and his alibi proved his innocence. He was jailed for 6 months for burglary.
Thank you, Nigel Green of Shipley, for sending us that one. Richard, your question again. Who produced a briefing for briefer briefs?
This is a legal question, is it not?
Right.
I haven't read anything about the law except for this extraordinary libel action that's going on.
There's a lot about briefs in there, wasn't there?
Yes, there was, rather. Did you see about it?
No, what was it?
Sir Jason Donovan chap.
Oh, yes.
Don't know who he is, some sort of popular singer, I believe. Anyway, it would be gross contempt of court were I to repeat any allegations that have been made.
There must be some report to make law courses.
Society. Law, try Law Society.
Law Society?
Yes, that's awful. Yes.
They want cases shorter.
That's right.
So lawyers make less money?
Yes.
Their heart's not in it, is it? I don't believe this report.
Well, it is the Law Society who created a sensational legal precedent by suggesting their membership could actually charge clients less. They say that if Britain's complex legal jargon was simplified just a little, defendants could have their appeals turned down for half the price. A police advisor has suggested further economies by cutting out the middleman and sending suspects straight to jail. The report says the current system is so complex, even very senior lawyers have trouble keeping up to date with the changes. One recently had no idea that curb crawling had been made illegal. Ian, your question now. How many convictions lack conviction? Another legal one.
How many convictions lack conviction?
Another report.
Yet another report, indeed.
About how many innocent people get sent to prison.
That's right.
Yes.
Is that news?
It's a study of British jails by the National Association of Probation Officers, which concluded 1 in 20 prison inmates could be innocent. Equally shocking to the Home Office was the news that 19 out of 20 could be guilty. Chris, here's a piece of music for you. We got a third war and I'm sure that we can win it. There's nothing you can do. We got a third war and there's more for sure right in it. So just relax and let it was Therm Warfare by Heatwave, and your question is, which hot little character's light has finally gone out?
It must be Mr. Therm.
It is Mr. Therm.
That little jagged character. Mr. Therm has disappeared. Well, Mr. Therm has disappeared.
Yes, he has.
Has he been privatised? Have I missed this?
No, he disappeared in England in 1960, but he's still been wandering the continent. This is very strange. It's like Busby, who's probably alive somewhere. They've decided to terminate his contract, but he's been in Sweden, places where they, you know, it's Signor Therm and Herr Therm, and it's all over Europe.
Anyway, it's all about Mr. Therm, who's been killed off on EC orders. The Therm as a unit of energy has now disappeared, along with other imperial measurements, like the good old 100 weight, the amount of sticky mud one gaspel workman could dig out of a hole and spread over the road after 8 mugs of tea, and the British Standard Yard, the place the British Standard gas fitter always had to go back to for parts. Alan, your question now. What war could bring a tear to the eye?
It's not the bugger who shot a penguin on the beach in Johannesburg, no. See that?
Oberon.
You saw this. A man shot a penguin on a beach in Cape Town.
Good.
You all saw that, didn't you? No, claim self-defense. It's true. No. He was attacked by a penguin.
In Cape Town?
Yeah.
At least the penguin's black and white.
Could bring a tear. Oh, it's not the Onion War.
It is the Onion War.
What a very complicated way of asking an extremely straightforward question. An Englishman with 4 tons of Turkish onions on a truck tried to import them into France, pretending they were European onions. He was... the truck was knocked over. The French then fried all the onions and sent him back, and he has now sworn to take another onion truck and ram the ferry at Roscoff. It's an everyday story of onion people. I don't know why you had to...
They've done better than this. They subsequently sent across a huge lorry marked, "These are Turkish onions," in French, so that everybody can understand it, which in fact was empty, which was, sure enough, ambushed, set on fire. Meanwhile, the real onions were sneaking through the back roads in an unmarked lorry. I mean, brilliant.
Yes, well, it's the Onion War with France, which intensified this week when a British haulier did his bit for Queen and Country greengrocer and successfully duped the enemy. It's a question of national pride and the inalienable right of every Englishman to import Turkish onions through France in German lorries via a Scandinavian ferry. And the scores at the end of round two are still tied at 8-all. Well, round three commences with an item spotted in Marketing Week.
The advertising of condoms, not permitted on television before 1987, remains a marketing dilemma. Mark Clark, account director on Durex, says, "Although young people now know they need to use condoms, it's still a difficult product to position."
Thank you, Frank Scatchard of Burley, for sending us that. Richard, your question again. What fungi made big news?
I was thinking, right, if they want to do condoms on television, they could always get Claire Rayner to introduce them to the public, couldn't they? She would do it in a sort of tasteful way.
Condoms with wings.
Something like that.
What about this fungi? Any ideas there?
It can't be Ashdown again.
I think it's actually about a fungi, isn't it?
It is about a fungi.
There was an enormous mushroom.
That's right.
Bigger than a whale.
That's right.
What's Claire Rayner to anything to do with it?
The world's largest, heaviest and oldest organism. Found in the forests of North America, the 1,500-year-old mushroom-like parasite weighs over 100 tons and could fill Wembley Stadium, or alternatively, a small omelette for Pavarotti. If it keeps growing at its present rate, it will achieve world domination sometime in the 25th century. In the meantime, this overblown vegetable matter, which doesn't know when to stop multiplying, has emerged as hot favourite for the Democratic presidential nomination. Ian, listen to this.
Oh, there's something about your plastic. There's something about your plastic. There's something about a pasty that is fine, fine, fine. It may be the way you make it. It may be the way you make it. It may be the way you make it on the line, line, line. You can keep your fancy dishes. My one and only wish is to see them pasties marching out in line, line, line. When you taste the handsome crust, you could eat until you bust. There's something about a pasty that is fine.
That's Jason Donovan singing Joseph and his amazing Technicolor pasty.
And the question is, what's the reason why 20,000 Cornishmen will have to cough up?
Oh, Richard.
Obscure story, this. Yes. Obscure story.
Well, as we can't do the non-obscure stories, what's the point of giving us obscure ones?
Hope springs eternal.
Well,
let's have a guess.
It's not an EC redesignation of the pasty as a brick or a foot. they're always doing a fruit, possibly.
Fruit. The Cornish pasty mountain.
What do they have to cough up? I mean, they've got these...
I'll tell you if you like. This is a High Court hearing which took 3 days to rule that Cornwall is part of England. These legal reforms can't come soon enough.
They did that in 3 days. That is quick.
It is. When you consider that anyone else could work it out from an AA roadmap. It's all about Fred Trull and his scheme to avoid paying the poll tax in Cornwall by invoking the 1508 charter signed by Henry VII, which exempted Cornish tin miners from paying taxes. This was the same one that lets builders and motor mechanics off VAT and exempts taxi drivers from ever carrying change for a fiver. So Justice Millett did his bit for streamlining the legal processes by describing the case as so misconceived it's difficult to know how to refute it except by asserting the contrary. It was later translated by the Law Society as no chance, mate. Chris, your question. What has been battered into print?
Battered into print? This has got to be something to do with fried fish. Battered. You're not allowed to eat fish and chips out of newspapers anymore.
No.
Now, there's an academic with time on his hands, as so many of them have. He's written a book about the history of fish and chips and its meaning for the working class.
That's right.
And it's all about cod and the northerner. But it's not. It really is. No, it's changed them. And apparently there was a time when legislation was brought in to stop the smell of fish drifting over Bradford.
Absolutely fascinating book it must be.
It is. Imagine.
It's 35 quid. I saw that. I mean, like any hack, I always try to see what they're... In the tiny, tiny, tiny diamond italic print at the bottom of this Times story, it's 35 quid for this.
That's right. Absolutely right. Or £34.50 to take away. It's Fish and Chips and the British Working Classes, 1870 to 1940. It's been published this week. The scholarly scratch and sniff tome contains spectacular accounts of the great moments in fish and chip history, like the thrill-a-minute Yorkshire dripping war and the unforgettable Hartlepool vinegar incident. Alan, your proper question. Tell us why uneasy lies the head that wears a beard.
This is a brilliant American critic called Lillian Schwartz, who says that Queen Elizabeth put a beard on and wrote Hamlet. What she has is a computer, and if you put together an American literary critic in a computer, you normally have trouble. And she has put the drawing from the first page of the 1623 folio into her computer, and also put in a picture of Queen Elizabeth, and she's got a sort of identity kit of Queen Shakespeare I. And she says this proves incontrovertibly that Shakespeare was Queen Elizabeth I.
You're absolutely right, Alan. It's the remarkable claim by American computer expert Lillian Schwartz that the best-known picture of William Shakespeare is actually of Queen Elizabeth I and a false beard and moustache. This has come as a shock to students of the Bard. It must have been a bit of a surprise for Anne Hathaway, really. Especially if she was expecting the complete works. Yes, well, let me give you the scores at the end of the round. Richard and Ian are 10, but Alan and Chris are now in the lead with 13. Before we start the final round, here's a news report from the Liverpool Echo.
A Los Angeles policeman has been suspended from duty for a week for breaking wind near two handcuffed prisoners. Juan Gomez appeared before a disciplinary board yesterday accused of assault with felonious flatulence. His defense was that he had an upset stomach. But the prisoners claimed he told them sadistically, check this out. And then broke wind.
Oh, dear. Thank you, Peter Wallace from Liverpool, for sending us that. Richard, here's a piece of music for you.
Says goodbye to a life of religion. Flies like a pigeon away from it all. Makes a vow to set her sights higher. Follow desire away from it all.
Well, that was The Nun by a group called Lace. And the question is, why are the nuns about to go on the run?
I was just thinking this quiz is rather like the boat race. You know. One side always wins.
There's a nun that was shot on a South African beach in mistake for a penguin.
Just a minute, you've had your say. So far, nuns have been ignored in this election. But there are a great many of them in the country. And there's no doubt that they constitute an important part of the electorate. The fact that many of them are silent doesn't necessarily mean that they aren't interested in the issues of the day.
That's a very interesting election call program, though. That... Hello?
These are the nuns that live next door to the SAS, aren't
That's
they?
That's right. Yeah.
There was a bunch of nuns somewhere down in probably Hampshire, and their nunnery was next door to an SASery. And I can't remember exactly, they kept nipping over the wall and thumping the special air services, and they won 3 out of 4, one drawn decision. And eventually the nuns, having triumphed over the SAS, they left, because it was noisy, it was thunder flashes in the middle of the night, and you don't want that if you're a nun, I can tell you. and they've gone.
That's right.
They sort of upped sticks, as it were.
That's exactly right. Ian, where did pennies from heaven prove to be fool's gold?
Pennies from heaven, fool's gold.
There was a cow from heaven. Did you see that about the cow that fell out of an aeroplane?
No. And I read about the penguin.
Well, these two Russian sailors were sailing on, and this cow fell out of the sky. And some Russians had been taking a cow in an aeroplane and decided that they didn't like it and pushed it out of the aeroplane. It might not be true.
Anybody know the
yes.
answer to this one?
It's on the M606.
Quite right.
And thousands and thousands of £50 notes suddenly started fluttering down and were getting caught in people's windscreen wipers, and they all stopped and started gathering this. So they thought it was a political stunt. That was a great thing. Then they saw the money was fake, and they knew it was a political stunt. But it was a box of forged notes that fell off the back of a lorry and blew all over this motorway and stopped it.
It's a sudden shower of cash which brought traffic to a standstill on the M606, as Alan so rightly says. Police believe the money was dropped by a nervous counterfeiter or a politician on his way to a key marginal seat. Chris, which Asians are making a crust out of crustaceans? Very interesting Japanese story.
There are none.
Not a none in...
No, I mean, there is no interesting that? Japanese story.
Crustacean. Japanese nuns. They're selling lobsters.
Right.
Of course.
Ian.
The Japanese are selling lobsters.
No.
you're making this up as you go.
As well. Right. Right.
They've set up a new chain called Lobster You Like.
I don't believe this.
Well, it's better than the answer I've got here, I'll tell you that. Give him a point. It's all about a Japanese plan to drop scrap cars on the seabed to make recycled homes for young lobsters. A local expert said the interiors of old abandoned cars make excellent breeding grounds. And the lobsters seem to like them as well. Alan, what underground travellers face a musical send-off?
It's moles.
Moles, it is.
They're killing moles by playing Jason Donovan records at them. That's about it, really.
This is about groundsmen at a stately home near Stroud who plan to repel moles by planting the microchip innards of musical birthday cards into the tunnels of their furry adversaries. Apparently, moles are highly sensitive to sound, vibration, and anything by Roger Whittaker. And meanwhile, the onlookers are puzzled as to how the groundsman can possibly know the date of each mole's birthday. Before we reveal the final scores, let's see what cuttings the teams have brought along. Richard, what have you brought for us?
This is a strange advertisement from the Colchester Evening Gazette. It says, left foot shoes, unused, slippers, sandals, size 10 to 12, £20 the lot. Suit one-legged person. It would only suit a one-legged person with a left.
Yes, I think we've grasped that.
I should have made that clear, I think.
Well, in the interest of balance.
Yes, right.
Oh, well. Ian, have you got something for us?
I have, Barry.
Good.
I have a quotation here from the BBC's CFAX service.
Oh.
It says, industry is moving out of recession, the latest CBI report has said. The CBI survey of 1,400 firms found that for the first time in over a year, more firms expected to increase output than cut back. It's based on the findings of two of its members who visited Tibet in July and interviewed 130 inhabitants.
Very good. Chris, what have you brought for us?
A story from The Sun on the 27th of this month. Black day for forger, it says. Jack Whalen was nicked printing fake dollar bills after he used black ink instead of green. Police in Cleveland, Ohio said he should at least have asked someone what colour they were. He is colourblind.
Very good. Alan.
I have one, Barry, from the Sydney Morning Herald.
Oh, really?
A Birralonga man has been given a 6-month suspended sentence under a 19th century New South Wales blasphemy statute for going through a form of marriage with a wombat. The circuit court heard how Kerry Welling, 38, had broken into a Birralonga church with two associates, one of whom acted as vicar and the other as best man, during a service in which Welling plighted his troth with a 6-year-old bear, a pet belonging to Welling's father. Welling, who is being sued for divorce, told the court he had wanted to show his wife that anything would be better than her. And continued, I have also changed my will. In the event of my death, the wombat gets everything.
Thank you. Thank you all. But now let's look at the final score. Richard and Ian have got a well-earned 12, but Alan and Chris have streaked away and are this week's winners with 17. Well done. Before we leave you, here's a cutting from the South Wales Echo, sent in by Keith Dorr of Cardiff.
A woman who was taken to hospital with complications during her pregnancy has been prosecuted for leaving her dog alone at home while she was treated. Paula Anderson admitted abandoning the animal in circumstances likely to cause suffering, but a charge of abandoning a goldfish was dismissed.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Richard Ingrams, Alan Corran, Ian Hislop and Chris Dunkley. The chairman was Barry Took and the news was read by me, Peter Donaldson. The programme was written by Ian Pattinson and Robert Fraser Steele. The producer was Colin Swash.
And if you're looking for entertainment on the day after the election, tickets are now available to attend a special recording of the news quiz with Barry Took, Richard Ingrams, Alan Corran, John Wells and Peter Hobday. It's at the BBC's Paris studio in London at 1 o'clock on Friday, April the 10th. Please write stating how many tickets you want to the BBC Ticket Unit, BBC Broadcasting House, London W1A 1AA. That's the BBC Ticket Unit, BBC Broadcasting House, London W1A 1AA. And that's for tickets to attend the News Quiz election special at 1 o'clock on Friday, April the 10th. You're listening to BBC Radio 4.